ladies and men of the gentle disposition, welcome back to Doom Radio, also known as Tango TV, where today, well, we're churning out the interviews here, at least if you consider two in a month to be churning. We do at Tango TV, that's how slow we are. And today on the program you'll know him, hopefully, I suspect you might, for his unique style, his Slaughter-like maps, his compositions perhaps, and his speedrunning. Stardate 20X6 is the most recent high-profile map that is released. It's Rivix. Hello, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Good evening, sir. Run of the mill, I guess. We have a model that we'll stick to when it comes to interviewing peoples. And we usually start with origins and how you got introduced to Doom, or perhaps by what other games you were introduced to Doom. Take us back to when.
Sure, sure. So place yourself in the late 90s. Unfortunately, I don't have a very interesting introduction to Doom. It's going to be sort of run-of-the-mill of anyone who was playing in that era.
Sure.
So my earliest memories, I guess, were a friend down the street got a copy of Doom 95, and we weren't very good at it. I don't think anyone was really good at first-person shooters at the time. So we largely just played, you know, with cheats and, you know, wandered around the maps and occasionally tried to be useful. Doom 2 came along. It was the same sort of situation. I mean, I was only like 9 or 10 at the time I was playing this. So I really didn't get too heavily into playing it legitimately. It was mostly just wander around and kill things because it was one of the only games that I was familiar with where you could do that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So it was largely just playing it socially, and then I sort of dropped off the face of the Doom planet for about a decade or so after that. It was something, I guess, I came back to it maybe in like 2010, just sort of as, you know, fond memories of this game. You know, I'll check out the forums, see what's going on. And from there, I kind of spiraled into its current situation of, you know, where I am now with mapping and playing and what have you.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not really an interesting story. It's mostly I had this game as a kid, forgot about it for a decade, and now I'm back.
You know, that does actually seem to be a trend I've noticed, suggests that to me that the question we should rather be asking is not how you got introduced into Doom, although, you know, in some instances we do get some interesting stories there, but rather how did you get back into it, because that's actually the case with many, many people, myself included. I actually went on absence for about a decade and came back, and I honestly can't remember why I came back. It might have been because I wanted to conduct reviews and try my hand at writing, and I thought Doom might be a decent outlet to do that, what with all the material. But can you remember why you actually ended up coming back?
I think I can, actually. It was all throughout, you know, as a kid, my parents were big into the Mac computers. So while I had the games, the editing utilities weren't really top-notch. I mean, if you're familiar with Hellmaker and how terrible that was.
Yes.
Yeah, so I guess it was around 2010, 2009 or whatever when I started getting computers like dual-booting them or having dedicated Windows systems. And then I just sort of remembered, oh, I could check out, you know, some of the legit editing utilities that people have been using. And it was sort of discovering how wonderful Doom Builder is and how easy it is to create custom content and things like that. So that was sort of like a blank canvas where I had all these tools and I just played around with them and started picking up more custom maps and community content and just sort of fell into it head first.
All right.
So upon your return to Doom is when you first started getting into custom content and the PWADs and all that?
For the most part, yeah. When I was playing the game as a kid, I did download Hellmaker and poke around with it, and I mainly have memories of just it destroying maps if you tried to, like, split vertices or delete a sector. So I did make a few of the obligatory bad 90s content. I think I have, like, a myhouse.wad sitting on a hard drive somewhere and things of that nature, but it was nothing I ever shared, and I think it probably got lost in a hard drive crash somewhere. But so it was really after the span of time that I came back to it and really started getting into it again.
Did you start developing a penchant for more slaughter-oriented gameplay quite quickly, or how did your preference for mapping sort of evolve? Where did it start?
Well, in pretty much any game that I've ever played, I've sort of had a fascination with, you know, masochistically difficult content and things like that. Largely my gaming background was Nintendo games, you know, Nintendo Hard, how the level of difficulty back then was several notches higher, maybe not for the right reasons, but and then also, like, platforming games, like, I Want to Be the Guy sort of stuff, that was sort of my jam. And, I mean, even when I wasn't playing Doom, I was also developing, like, Flash games and things like that for, you know, sites like Newgrounds and things like that. And even then, when I was making my own content, it was ridiculously hard stuff. So I think it was sort of natural that I gravitated in that direction. Although, when I first came back to the Doom scene, I guess the first thing I contributed or released publicly was something for Mayhem 2012.
All right.
And I guess come to think of it, that was a pretty hard map, so maybe I started right out the gate going in that direction.
Grant, I can't actually remember which one that was. Tarzan, did you play through Mayhem by chance?
I did play through Mayhem, and...
You've wiped it from your memory.
No, I remember...
It was a pretty mixed bag.
Yeah, I remember the Ribbix, because it kind of reminded me of Sunder. If it's what
right. And incidentally, that turned out to be a word that I used, somewhat critically, apparently, in response, with regards to StarNet 2086, because it did seem rather sundrous to me in its aesthetic, I guess.
Oh, yeah, naturally.
Yeah, sure.
I think the biggest trait I've gleaned stylistically from Insane Gazebo is the tendency to sort of have a dedicated one-color scheme per map, where you have sort of a highlight color, and then you have your blacks, your browns, your grays. I don't know, it looks too good. Maybe I'm addicted to that scheme.
And at the moment, I think people are starting to take note of your unique mapping style, getting a lot of feedback on the sort of on the pictures, thread, and the like. You keep shooting
out these. Yeah, it seems to be.
Yeah.
Positively received. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm happy with that.
And looking at the stuff you've posted in the pictures thread, I actually really like it because it follows more of when we played Stardate, our main complaint with it, that the colors weren't prominent enough. And
a lot. You weren't the only one to voice that complaint. That's actually one of the reasons why, for a few of the sections in these maps I'm working on, it's just straight up full retard. Everything is blue.
Yes. I love that. That's
brilliant. That's right. That was one of our complaints, that the purple that was included was all on toothpick strips on the sort of dark side, wasn't it?
You do have to understand, though, working on 7 maps of those that are pretty big, I guess at the time it did seem like a lot of purple.
When you got back into Doom, you developed a style that you like pretty rapidly, which doesn't happen for a lot of people, so that's good. Would you say that style, though, meshes with things you like in other creations you've made, like that that very simplistic scheme, like that you took from Insane Gazebo or Sunder style mapping? Is that simplicity found in, say, your Flash games or anything else you've made, or is it something that just came to light in Doom because of how simple Doom is to just, you know, make something like that look great?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it, actually. It's so easy to make things that look beautiful in Doom with not a whole lot of effort, and being able to just create immense structures of varieties of scales and the diverse palette choices you have. And at the time I was making other content like Flash games and such, I was much younger, I guess. But I think this using Doom Builder and such is the first time I've had both the ability and the inclination to spend time to make things, I guess, as good-looking as they are, as you know, subjectively. But
sure. My question actually pertaining to your style, do you think perhaps that limits you in the sort of maps that you're able to create? Because the only time I've actually paid attention to mapping is with that style, and I didn't check out the Mayhem map.
I've done plenty of other stuff that's not really in that vein.
Yeah.
Most of the early releases I had on the forums, I guess if you ignore, I had a map set that I don't think anyone really heard of. I think it was called Spoons.
I did hear of that. In fact, I think I mentioned it. That was yours. I loved it. I really like that.
It was, yeah, I guess that was my sort of first attempt at hashing out this style, and I was working out some of the kinks. And they're pretty, I mean, all the maps are linear as can be, and the traps get pretty cheesy, but it's not terrible, I guess.
No, it was cool. In fact, I think I remarked when I was playing it, not to anyone in particular, I was playing it by myself, it was like a mini Thunder. It was,
it's scaled down a bit.
Both aesthetically, and all the maps are very, very small and contained and gimmicky, and extremely difficult. I think I only completed like 3 of the available, however many maps there were. But I liked what I saw. Yeah, it was very good. But I mean, I asked this question mainly because you are presently, it seems to me that you're still sort of developing your style. I mean, are you still evolving this year?
Yeah, with every map set I create, I'll go back and look at some old ones and you know, think of things that look terrible, or just notice things that look terrible or gameplay choices that were questionable. And I think this is probably going to continue until I stop making maps, because always when you get feedback from different sources, you sort of look at your levels in a different light and consider the different ways that people might play it. And, you know, you can choose how accommodating you want to be, but recently I guess I am sort of trying to expand the demographic of these maps.
Right.
Because I started out, the first high-profile things I released, aside from just miscellaneous posts in the Wads and Mods forum, would be the maps I made for Slaughterfest 2012.
Right.
Spent a good amount of time on those. And those are, you know, pretty esoteric maps where the number of people who play them is probably not going to be extraordinarily high, although they are.
Right.
They do seem to be gaining popularity somehow. And sort of a transition from that was Stardate 20XT6, which is a Homestar reference, by the way.
I thought I was referring to like postcode or something. Okay.
Yeah, I noticed I watched the playthrough videos you guys did that you called like Stardate 20X6 or something.
Essex is it's a county in England. I don't know. I don't know why I draw that comparison. It's yeah.
Anyways, I guess the creation of those maps, I tried to be a little bit more friendly. I mean, added one lower difficulty setting, so if people wanted to play it somewhat casually, they could. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to still expand in that direction, sort of the dynamic range of players that can find the gameplay enjoyable, trying to increase that with each map set that I put out.
And doing so, like, I've always listed this as one of the positives, I think, of trying to make your map set as accessible to other people as you can. Do you find yourself discovering new things that you actually like in tweaking the gameplay and trying out new things that might make other people, not just the Slaughter crowd, enjoy your map set?
Definitely. Because if you make a map that just falls to the wall the entire time, it's fun to play through it if you know like exactly what's going to happen, but sometimes I just want to sit down and play something less rigorous and in accommodating for different skill levels in the maps. You can go back to it and play it on different settings and sort of it's just a more enjoyable experience sometimes when you don't want to be stressing out over it. So I've certainly found new combat situations and such that are enjoyable to play by accommodating in this fashion.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm taking a look at not actually taking a look at that because I haven't played it. I don't think I will be doing so anytime soon. Slaughterfest 2012 and 13. It seems to me like the alongside of Mayhem, perhaps the perfect platform on which you could sort of exercise your style. Were you treating those sort of projects experimentally as a sort of way in which you could further evolve, or were you really looking to put out contribute to a polished product sort of thing? Was it a balance between the two?
I think one of the big draws to the Slaughterfest project for me was just going through the thread. I mean, I was already a fan of difficult map sets and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I'd played through 2011, which was a pretty big mixed bag, but it had some enjoyable maps in it. But just going through the thread on the forum, and it was really sort of blown away by the caliber of players that play these maps and some of the really useful feedback you get. I mean, these people post a lot of demos along with, you know, critiques of things they'd like to see changed, and it looked like a really good forum to gather feedback and sort of progress in this direction. Mm-hmm. So I sort of used it as how most people would treat community projects, as sort of a learning experience.
Sure. That's a pretty good approach. When we had Rock King on the program 2 weeks ago, we asked him a couple of similar questions pertaining to his how comfortable he was as a map with his current style. Mm-hmm. Now, he actually brought up Doom to the way it did because it was something that he, you know, he would have to map in someone else's style. He would have to, he was interested in honing his ability to map from different directions, and that was the direction he sort of chose to do so. And I guess what I'm leaning towards here with this question is putting restrictions on yourself or limiting yourself in such a way as to force a change in your style or to create something new. And you partook in one of the 5 in 100 speed mapping sessions.
Yes.
Was that sort of an effort to do that? Were you sort of trying to push yourself to see what you could do in certain restraints?
I don't know. I've participated in a few of the speed mapping projects that pop up from time to time on the forums.
Yep.
So, I don't know, because I've always viewed it from a slightly more cynical angle, where I view it sort of as a bite-sized project that it's not going to take a whole lot of time. I can make a fun little map out of it, and we're all going to have fun playing it. Yay.
So there's no ultimate objective to sort of change your style in any way? Or
nah, I haven't really used it as a vehicle for personal growth or what have you.
That's okay. And,
cool. I don't know.
That's fine. That's perfect, you know. I'm glad that there's finally that answer, because I was frankly getting sick and tired of all the people who were like, yeah, I speed map to boost creativity.
Yeah, not really.
So, going into the things that you've done besides mapping, because you actually do cover the entire range of contributions to the Doom community, from MIDIs to speed running to mapping to playtesting.
Mm-hmm.
When you started, when you got back into the community, how quickly did you get into speedrunning?
That one took a little while. It was mostly, I noticed people posting FDAs as responses to, you know, people posting maps.
Right.
And I had no idea anything about ports. I think I was just using GZ Doom at the time, sort of it can handle everything. So I didn't really know much about demos or compatibilities and things like that. But once I figured that out, that's sort of when I discovered just how many players are so amazingly good at this game. I mean, you go through some of the people who still post in the speedrunning forums. You got guys like Ancaligon, Jario, Nevinos, Akublock back when he posted, and Time of Death, and GGG Mork, Gugugamork, I don't know how he pronounces his name. But just these players who are so, like, inhumanly good at this game, where it's like I'm having a hard time envisioning a situation that I could put them in that would actually, like, kill them. And sort of just being blown away by the skill of some of the players was motivation enough for me to sit down and try and power through some maps.
That sounds kind of unusual to me that would be a sort of a defining reason if you wanted to join. Because skill is something I think is quite understated in Doom, these days at least, and probably not in the 90s. I don't know.
What do you mean?
We talk about skill with regards to how effective a playtester they could be. For example, but I mean, we rarely get super impressed anymore with, you know, how skillful a player can be, and sort of it's shrug off material, and we can say, oh, that's pretty cool. Just I don't know, to me, to be so impressed by someone's ability to play the game, and that being the reason for you wanting to start doing demo recording is quite unique for me, actually. I don't think I've heard that before.
Yeah, I can't think of anybody else who's used that as their so. In getting into speed mapping, and this is not speed mapping, speed running, and I like it when we have mappers who do these things, because I like to see how other things influence their mapping.
Mm-hmm.
Being a speed runner yourself, would you say that has influenced how you map?
Yes, in a very, very distinct, very direct way.
Good. Yeah.
Although I still don't. I know there's a lot of tropes that sort of makes speedrunning a map fun or less fun, and admittedly, I violate many of them. I think the entirety of Stardate 20XC6 was not a very speedrunning-friendly map in any way, yet there were still people who blazed through it pretty gloriously. But just knowing where monsters are going to pool when you, you know, focus in certain directions, and avoiding slowly lowering things to block your way from rooms, and avoiding tedious platforming sections, and so I guess knowing what annoys you as a speedrunner gives you a good list of things to avoid when making a map.
Did you say that 20X6 was made with speedrunning in mind?
No, he said that it has a lot of stuff that annoys speedrunners.
Yes,
right. Yeah, no. But when you were making it, you weren't interested in catering it towards the speedrunning crowd, for example.
Well, I'd say there's sort of two different types of speedrunning that I would think about. There's the people who are trying to beat it in the fastest time possible.
Right.
And then there's another sort of lesser explored branch, which is merely completing a map that's very difficult and not necessarily caring too much about the time. I know there are a few members are on the forums who record things in that way. So I guess the maps were sort of catered to that type of demo recording, right, where it's merely completing the challenge, not necessarily doing it tremendously fast.
You know, I've actually had this theory, and I think we discussed a little bit on the actual speedrunning dedicated Program B episode, in which we were talking about what sort of what would service the speedrunning community better than any other type of map set. Because it seems to me like a map set like 20XX is, because it's so set piece and counter oriented, it can only be tackled in a certain number of ways, and so its longevity as a map set for speedrunning is sort of limited. Is that something you'd agree with?
Yeah, the to make a map set more attractive for speedrunners, it usually helps to make it challenging to find the route, but not make the route tedious every time you're redoing it. Mm-hmm. And you get bonus points, I guess, for including fancy ways you can accelerate or skip various portions of the map through, like, vial jumps or glides or fancy things like that. But it almost seems to defeat the novelty of finding those tricks if you purposefully put them in the map.
Yeah. That's something me and Thompson have discussed extensively, I think.
And I fully agree with you on that. That, yeah, definitely if you put that stuff in. But no, what Rubix is saying in regards to Stardate, and I fully agree with him on that, is that there is a separate group of people who, not necessarily speedrunners, but when I do it, you call it impatiently playing the game. You just kind of, you play it in a very fast-paced, trying to get through it quickly, but not really focusing on the end time so much as just completing the challenge.
Right.
And I definitely think that does exist in Doom, and it would be interesting to see more map sets catered to that, because Stardate does strike a balance, and I believe you actually posted in the thread when you made it that you were trying to go for that balance where it's not too slaughtery, but it's still hard.
Yeah, that's sort of the ground I try and go at a lot, unless I'm making an unapologetically slaughtery map. There's definitely a nice middle ground. And I don't think much of that map set really was heavy slaughter fare, save for the last level or so.
You made the Slaughterfest 2013 thread not more than 2 months ago, and you've already got how many submissions?
Actually, the thread was made in January of this year. So.
It just started getting active then, 2 months ago.
Yeah, it's true. It sort of wavers. And I'm actually surprised by the amount of new mappers we've seen in Slaughterfest 2013, those who weren't necessarily active in the slaughter scene beforehand. So I'm happy with all the new faces that we're kind of seeing in there. And it has sort of picked up lately. I mean, we're already at 32 maps, but the sort of way that this project works is that we'll acquire as many maps as we want and sort of pick and choose a set of 32 and, you know, do something else with the rest maybe. So it's by no means completed, but there is a healthy amount of maps already, and many of them are very good, actually.
So you definitely say that community is growing?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, and would you say that a lot of people like you are blending styles to where they're trying to accommodate multiple things?
I think that's sort of inherent to the popularity of it growing. You're gonna get new faces in the slaughter scene making maps with slightly different quirks that you may not have considered, and once you have that tool in your kit, then you start kind of using that, and it sort of it branches out that way as well.
It actually seems to me that we had another Program B episode in which we were trying to discuss, albeit partly successfully, the definition of some of these words, and slaughter maps was one of the terms we brought up.
Yeah, slaughter is a messy word, because if you use it to define anything, even in a context that you understand, people are going to have these notions of big rooms of giant grids of monsters and things like that. Mm-hmm. I think what the term has really come to describe, at least with respect to the Slaughterfest series, is inherently you're going to have a high monster density, which is obvious, but it's more like the way the monsters are introduced to the player, the way they're presented. It's sort of an arcadey fashion where you just sort of artificially create this combat situation that's abandons all sense of creating a realistic place.
Right.
It's like I'm gonna have a giant ledge of revenants and then a big closet of hell knights, and it's sort of the way they'll interact and the way they force you to move to, you know, do the crowd management and eventually clear things out.
Right.
So I think that's sort of what the term has come to mean instead of just sheerly, you know, magnitude.
Right. That's interesting because I think it's actually one thing that we haven't discussed enough on Doom Radio is the actually speaking to a mapper who does sort of predominantly and getting behind the mapping process there. So when you're actually thinking of creating a new map, do you think first with regards to how the encounters are going to be set up? And you
yes,
think about
definitely.
The themes, you always think about that first and sort of and where they're going to relate to each other. And then you go about doing the visuals. That doesn't come into it until way later. Right.
Whenever I'm starting a sort of map, I'll always have a few set pieces in mind and then maybe a general environment that I would want to place them in. And almost every room that I start off designing, you know, starts as big rectangles, you know, primitive shapes. And once I get a situation where I think the gameplay is interesting enough, where the monster placement forces you to do some sort of interesting strategy, maybe, then that's when I start, you know, honing the visuals and trying to create a place out of this. And there are certainly some slaughter map authors who, you know, completely abandon the visual side of it. They're creating like a strictly a gameplay scenario. I think GGG Mork had some map sets which he called gameplay only map sets, where he just made terrain and placed monsters on, but everything was like the same texture. It was like purely what kind of combat situations can we create? So there's a gamut of approaches to that.
And it actually makes me think how convenient the sort of Sundress approach would be, because you can simply say to yourself, I mean, you can still focus on the gameplay, the set pieces, exclusively the monster placement, and then think to yourself, well, okay, I don't really need to worry about the visuals because I've already decided it's going to be skin tech and metal. And then, and then you know, you just mold the entire, all the encounters using that.
I wouldn't say that everything goes like that. There are some maps where I have enough ideas for encounters work, and it's enough to, you know, generate an entire map out of it. But there are some times where I would hone a visual theme first, and then once you know this theme sort of inside and out, you pick like one room with this theme, you know, experimenting with textures, experimenting with different shapes. Mm-hmm. And once you have a combination of shapes and textures that you like, it's almost like the subsequent rooms can sort of map themselves. You know the general shape, you know how this map is, you know, how it breathes. And then, so you draw a bunch of associated shapes, and then you sort of think, you know, what interesting gameplay situations can I create with this shape? And then sort of start from there, building an encounter that way. So I guess there are several approaches you could take.
Mm-hmm. Sounds wholly unique. Tansman, do you have any questions pertaining to the mapping process behind slaughter maps in particular?
No, because I'm pretty sure it varies from person to person, and I like how Ribix does it. I think that's an intelligent way to create a map. I don't think anybody maps purely around visuals. I'm pretty sure when everybody's mapping, even, you know, people who you tend to associate with visuals over gameplay, like, say, Esselfortium, I know that he will at least consider gameplay in every room he's making. Like, I'd like to see a mapper who maps solely based on visuals and how the heck that map would play, because, you know, the thing about Doom is that it's abstract enough that, you know, I'm going to put a monster here on a ledge, and that ledge can look great, but if you're just thinking about visuals, I mean, not a lot of people would put certain things into a room that you put in just to accommodate for a monster. Like a bend around a wall that will let the monster not see the player when they first enter the room, but if they try and run from the trap behind them, they'll run into that monster. Stuff like that, which, you know, even though in the visual theme looks like it's part of the visuals, probably wouldn't be there if people weren't thinking about the gameplay while they were designing the map.
Huh, yeah, I realize this interview isn't about me, so I'll keep this brief, but just what you're describing there is almost the sort of approach I take, believe it or not. I do actually focus largely on visuals, and then for some reason the gameplay does sort of work itself out. And I think how that happens is because I've played enough Doom that I can focus on the visuals in my subconscious. I'm already creating something that's going to be suitable for gameplay, such that even though I focus entirely on the visuals, by the time I'm done, I can say, okay, that goes there, that goes there. This is how this works. And sometimes I'll have to do a bit of tweaking around. See, I don't typically have monster closets or anything like that. And I think this is because I'm focusing on the architecture. I don't know. That's how that was. Anyway, that was my Alphonsian segment.
That's your Alphonsian. Like, I think that could be applied, though, to everybody. Like, Rivix, when you're designing something, you've played enough Doom and made enough maps that you know immediately, like, okay, I'm making this room, and this monster's probably going to go there, and this monster's probably going to go there. And you don't have to, like, experiment a lot with thing placement on the whole before, you know, you just, I know exactly what I'm going to use here and how it's going to react to this situation, so I can safely be like, all right, this needs to be 72 high because I'm going to put a Revenant here or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. So finally, moving away from mapping and speedrunning, we get to the third thing that Rubix has committed to the Doom community. And yeah, music.
Gotta be. Yeah, you say you started in the early 2000s. That's quite some time ago. Where's all the material, man?
Well, it was mostly... I've been recording songs and stuff since I've been a teenager, largely guitar-centric with... you know, fake drum kits and things like that.
Ah.
And it was sort of, I was using MIDI as a compositional tool to write guitar-centric music. So sort of I would use it as a scratch pad to notate ideas. And eventually after playing around with some of the MIDI, the general MIDI instruments, I would make dedicated MIDI compositions that are just, you know, some song that I can't even play, but I can sequence it. And so I've had like hundreds of these things sitting around on my computer.
Hundreds.
And then it just, probably more than that even, but most of them aren't greats, I guess. Or most of them are just like half-baked ideas. And then one day it just sort of clicked that the Doom community is one of the few places remaining on the planet that has any use for MIDI files. And I happen to have a lot of MIDI files sitting around, so I figured I'd post a few of them. The thing, I don't think they're tremendously useful to the Doom community in the sense that they don't make appropriate background music most of the time. It's usually like foreground music, I guess. Lots of time changes and, you know, dynamic range changes and things like that that would sort of distract the player from a game that they're trying to play. So I haven't really made a concerted effort to develop good background music like many of the other MIDI composers around. But it's just something I sort of posted because I have them and I write music and maybe someone else might find this interesting.
I was actually about to say that I'm fairly certain there's any you can find a home for pretty much any MIDI, since, you know, the diversity of Doom allows you to map something appropriate. Mm-hmm. But then I remembered, you know, actually YakFax MIDI, while they're super awesome, they're just, I don't know, fitting them somehow into a Doom map, unless it's some sort of multiplayer map, like a deathmatch, which anything goes, let's be honest.
His MIDI was crazy.
Absolutely crazy, and super talented musician. What's your, where your influences come from?
Basically?
Or if not for MIDI, then just generally in music, I guess, because it sounds to me like you're an actual musician, on top of being a MIDI
player. Music is largely instrumental rock, jazz fusion sort of stuff.
Yep.
In terms of MIDI, largely influenced by video game soundtracks on, you know, 8-bit and 16-bit systems, the sort of melodic tendencies for NES games, Genesis, so that sort of works its way in there. And a lot of the composition is really guitar-centric in the way that chords are phrased and things like that.
So, would you say your non-MIDI music influences your MIDI music? Because there's a lot of MIDI musicians in Doom who, if you listen to their MP3 work and then you listen to their MIDI work, there's actually a gigantic disparity between the two of them, mainly in just structure and overall style.
Yeah, I think that's because when they're making MIDI for Doom, they're probably... making more of an effort to make something that would sound good in a game. Whereas I think you would see less of a distinction in some of the actual recordings I've done compared to the MIDI, because the MIDI is like the backbone of things I record. It would be like the backing track or the actual, you know, main rhythm part of it. So if you hear something in MIDI, odds are decent that I've made some attempts to actually record it.
I should actually mention just quickly, but I did say for a moment there, actual musicians when referring to Rubix's ability to play instruments outside of MIDI, and that may have come as an insult to the many MIDI composers who should also be regarded in the upper echelons as echelons rather as musicians. So
yes, no offense intended.
Please don't come to my house with pitchforks and torches, and burn down my pathetic excuse for an abode. I realise we just got into music, but I did actually forget to ask you, and I think we should probably do this before we get to the Desert Island Wad section, which will be coming up shortly. What are your influences as a mapper, I guess?
Besides the same gazebo.
Besides the same gazebo, which is a given.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think actually first and foremost, Death Destiny would probably be my favorite Doom mapper, even though his tenure on the forums was pretty brief and, you know, before my time, frankly, but just the sort of ruthless gameplay and the interesting situations that he creates is possibly my biggest influence when it comes to designing encounters. And I guess Darkwave deserves a nod for sort of carrying over some of those stylistic elements into many maps from Speed of Doom.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess some of the classics also, you got Eric Alm, Hui Pham. Another mapper I really like, even though they haven't made too much stuff, is a Skepticist for Skepland, obviously. Very amazing map set, even though it's only three maps.
Skepland is, like,
famously shunned at the 2012 Cacklebs.
It is, and I've often said that Skepland is the best difficulty-balanced map set I've ever played.
He gets so much mileage out of his monster placement. It's really something that I think is worth incorporating into more maps.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
And one more influence, I guess, is in addition to some of the more well-known stuff I've made, there's been plenty of just I'll open Doom Builder and draw crazy shapes and try and make something of it. And that sort of stuff is influenced by a lot of the maps that Time of Death and GGG post, where it's just these crazy structures and just these weird, like, fractal shapes and sort of experimental in that direction. So that's definitely an influence as well.
Fractals and Doom. I want to see some dragon curves, man. I want to see some Pythagoras trees. Just a personal... okay, here we go. Let's get to the Desert Island Wads. It's been a coming. It's not necessarily your, like, top five in order, not to say you have a favorite, but what are your five selections? Were you isolated on an island in the middle of nowhere?
Well, I guess given the answers to my to the previous question, this isn't going to surprise anyone.
No, but I mean, I guess you could elaborate a little more on why those are chosen.
Well, I guess when you ask this question, you want to get mileage out of your answer, so it tends to bias towards, like, megawads and things that you could sink a lot of time into, especially if I have that much time to kill on an island. I guess first I would probably pick Speed of Doom, and I'm not even sure how much I need to elaborate on that. It's pretty well known that it's a great map set and some very challenging maps in there.
I guess I could actually ask you, I mean, what are the distinctions you made between Joshi's and Darkwave's ability? Because you mentioned Darkwave, and typically when one mentions Speed of Doom, they think first of Joshi rather than Darkwave.
Really?
At least, I don't know, Tarnsman, when you think of Speed of Doom, do you place them on equal footing?
When I think of Speed of Doom, honestly, I think Joshi, and then I ask, hey, who was the guy who made the other half of the maps?
See? Tragic, isn't it? Yeah.
It is, but that's only because I just always forget Darkwave's name, not because I think of every map.
The dyslexia.
Yeah.
Okay.
No
elaboration required. It's not needed.
I'll just get this one out of the way now. I'd bring Sunder.
Yes.
You could sink some serious time into trying to beat those maps. So, and
Hag's Finger, man. It must have taken me an hour and a half. Plus,
excellent maps. Let's see. Probably go with some of the classics as well. Scythe 2 is my favorite Alm work. I wish he came back and finished Scythe X, but it's another story. Deus Vault 2 is worth mentioning. Again, I wish that was completed as well. And I guess sort of my oddball choice, I'd probably bring Killing Adventure by Ruba. If you guys are familiar with that map set.
Oh, okay, yeah. I haven't thought about that in ages.
Yeah.
It's just...
I'm actually unsure as to what I could ask you in response to that, since I can hardly remember
It's just a, it's a big joke wad set, but the maps are sort of cute and charming, and there's a lot of, you know, nostalgic music in it, and I don't know, it's just a fun map set. So.
Right. Well, that was wrapped up pretty damn quickly, I have to say. I don't think we were surprised any, aside from the Killing Adventure shindig right at the end there. Anyway, yeah, I think this has been a very concise interview. Anything else you'd like to ask, Tarnsman? It's a shame we didn't get any questions in from the Doom community, but you'll be happy to know that it is typically the case. So, yeah.
I honestly can't think of anything. Everything I wanted to ask was answered. It's been insightful, and it's always nice to hear from people who make maps and styles that I'm not particularly a fan of, but do enjoy that they exist, because I think that Doom benefits from having a broad stroke approach to
maps. Oh, absolutely. Even though I'm not a fan myself of slaughter-oriented gameplay, I'm very, very pleased to hear that it's picking up steam and getting some new advocates on board. Mm-hmm. Perhaps could evolve further. Anyway, thanks very much for tuning in to today's Tango TV, Doom Radio Tango TV episode, interview with Ribbix, from whom we glean so much. Tune in. Tarnsman, do we have another one lined up? You said there was a second.
We actually have coming up in the future, eventually, whenever No One in Sight comes out, Natural 20, but in the near future, we have Travers D and Lupinix Cassman.
Oh, I can hear you jumping all over the world with Gloy. Gloy, I'm not taking that back. It's a blend of glee and joy, and it shall now be hitherto employed in all episodes of Doom Radio. Thanks for joining in. All right, it's falling apart here. Goodbye.
But yes, look forward to this.
Oh, sweet. That was certainly something.